Hey, everybody, welcome to the Grow Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin McNulty, and this is your personal development school of growth, where each week my guests and I will bring and break down big ideas and practices that will help you learn, grow, and succeed in life. Thanks for checking us out. Now let the growth begin. Hey, everybody, thank you so much again for showing up for another episode of Grow Yourself, the Grow Yourself Podcast. You know, the late, and I would say great, motivational speaker Jim Rohn, he often spoke about human potential. In fact, he had a very unique approach to it. Often when he would go speak to particularly college students, which he loved to do, he would begin by asking, how tall will a tree grow? And of course, he would take answers from the audience, and he would not dismiss them, but he would eventually get around to the final answer. And he says, as tall as it can. And you see, his point was that, you know, nature being what it is, a tree doesn't stop growing until it actually reaches its maximum height or maximum potential. You know, it doesn't settle for less than its full potential. However, there's a big caveat there, and that is its potential is, you know, strictly depends on its environment and its conditions. And this notion, frankly, is true for every other species on this planet, with the exception of human beings. You see, the question, you know, for humans would then be, you know, how tall can a human grow? Or how much can a human being achieve? Well, the answer is actually quite similar. It depends. Yet unlike a tree, a human being has the power to choose. And that's really big. That's really important. You see, as a human, you have you can choose to grow or not. You can choose to pursue excellence or not. You can choose to live with purpose and passion or not. Well, my guest in this episode is someone who has done just that. Dr. Manish Arora is a living example of human potential. He's the co-founder of LearnDesk, an innovative education technology company that aims to make learning accessible, engaging, and effective for everyone. He's also an accomplished educator, inventor, researcher with a passion for knowledge and vision for the future. You should also know that Manish's story is one of courage, of determination, and yes, of growth. He grew up in India where he faced many challenges and many opportunities, as he likes to say, but he embraced education as a way of overcoming obstacles and achieving his goals. And so he set out to do all of that and more. In fact, he graduated from the very prestigious Indian Institute of Technology, where he excelled in academics and research. Dr. Arora's curiosity and ambition led him to explore new horizons and cultures. In fact, he moved to Korea thereafter, where he worked for Samsung Electronics, and he immersed himself into cutting-edge technology, but also the Korean culture, and in fact became fluent in the Korean language. After 8 years, Manish moved to the United States, where he then earned advanced degrees at UT, University of Texas in Austin, UC San Diego. So Dr. Arora's creativity, his innovation resulted in many breakthroughs and contribution. In fact, he has published over 30 papers in various fields, ranging from digital media to chip design, but he has also filed more than 50 patents, some of which have been licensed by major companies. However, Dr. Arora's mission is not only to create, but also to share. And so he co-founded LearnDesk in 2016 with the goal of transforming the way that we learn and teach. Manish believes that learning is a lifelong journey that never ends. He believes that everyone has the potential to grow as tall as they can. So please, if you would, ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming Dr. Manish Arora. Manish, it's so good to have you.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here, Kevin. Thank you so much for inviting me.
No, of course. Could you just reflect back on your life, Manish, and tell us who you are, where you came from, and just kind of bring us up to speed, you know, as to where you've been for however many years until now.
Sure. Thank you, Kevin, once again. So, Kevin, I grew up in India. And we grew up in a middle class family. We never saw any poverty or anything like that. In many ways, it was our parents' generation and the generation before that that overcame tremendous obstacles. While my life would be a little bit different from, say, an American kid who grew up at the same time, but I always say that we're kind of standing on the shoulders of giants already. So the story of my family goes back, a lot before than that. My grandmother grew up in what is now, Pakistan, Quetta, and she belonged to a very rich family. In fact, they were so rich at one point that, they used to go and do community cooking, and she used to have all these gold rings that she would just forget. And they said, we were cooking and then we had to do things. And then, I just forgot it. And their family said, it's okay, no worries. They were like that rich at that point. But, the partition of India changed everything, for that family and that time. And they moved to India. A lot of migration happened. This was 1947. In fact, my mom was born in India, but, my grandmother had, she belonged to, that family, but they lost everything, essentially. So millions of people and tremendous things happened in India at that point. We gained our independence from the British, but this was in some ways losing everything they had. But for some reason, my grandmother and I, she's inspired me a lot in my life. She had like seven children by then. She went back to school, and we're talking about the 1940s and the 50s. She ultimately became a teacher and retired as a principal of her school later on in life. And she was a lady who had overcome tremendous, she'd seen a lot of wealth early on, lost of it, but successfully raised a family.
Wow.
So, whenever I talk about problems or things, I put it in that context, and I suddenly realized life is awesome, right? Because other people have had much harder journeys.
Yeah.
And, she has been a big factor in our family. And my mother was a teacher early on, a homemaker later on. Growing up, my dad, his job took us to many places. We lived in many different cities. And India is this, tremendous country with so many different cultures and languages. So I was exposed to a lot of that. Growing up, I, at least till middle school, my teachers used to say that, this kid can become really good only if he applies himself. And I was fairly average in school. I was more interested in ping pong. I was more interested in playing ping pong. My dad, was a ping pong champion. He used to play for his bank's team, and we had all these trophies. What I found is that kids look at things, they imitate their parents. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, play ping pong. I made it to the school team, but at the expense of, academics and so forth. But then, growing up in India, and India is again very different. I've had, I've been lucky to study, for a long time as part of the U.S. education system and India as well. India, because there's so much economic, diversity and so forth, India, at least while we were growing up, was very big on standardized testing. So you go give this exam. You have 9 hours of standardized tests. They test you on maths, physics, chemistry. That's it. There are no essays. There's no life story. One in 500 kids would make it to the top. Growing up, our parents always wanted to, for us to go to a good college, as does every parent. Sure. in most countries, because it's a ticket to, much better life as compared to them. Sometime around after middle school and during high school, something clicked in me and I became a lot more academic. I think part of it was, a few teachers. I liked our maths teacher a lot. Again, we imitate people. We imitate our parents. We imitate our teachers. And she could get me to do things. I gained more interest. And then I began to immerse myself. I went and bought every book I could find. What I've found in life is that if you immerse yourself in things, that is the best way to learn. And it's not just set curriculums and everything. So I did, pass the test. In fact, by the second or third year of, I think it's typically a 2.5 year preparation period, a year and a half in, I was very confident, that I could do things. But by then I had immersed myself. So I went from a kid who was not that academic to somebody who became, fairly academic, figured things out. And that's been a big theme of my life. And then, it was more STEM stuff. I grew up, thinking that I'm not good at languages because I never used to score well in history or English and stuff like that. And then, as a life experiences took me to various places. Later on, I moved to South Korea. For the first year, I used to think, I have no ability to learn a language, but that changed. And later on, I'll tell you a little bit about how I learned Korean, which was rather unconventional. And then I moved to the US, went to grad school, founded a company, worked in industrial research. I'll talk about some of that, my experiences there and what guided me. But that's a high level overview, Kevin, of right from the beginning and my background and, the way my family grew up, to where I am today, Kevin.
You know, there's two things that you said, more than two things, but two things that jump out at me that are intriguing and that I think the average, let's just say many people, at least in this country, struggle with parents do, and that is whether, and there's been more and more debate about it now, but whether or not they should send their kid to college, or whether there's another means of success. And I think many years ago, this used to be much more understood that there were various means, roads, paths to success. When I was growing up, when I graduated from high school, it never entered my mind that I would go to college. It just wasn't part of my thinking. I eventually got my degrees in both bachelor's and master's, but I did my master's when I was 45, I think, or something like this, you see. But the point is that I want to ask you about this because on the one hand, you said, I really wasn't very accomplished in high school, and then something happened and you became more academic. The thought is you're either smart or you're not. You're either capable of college or you're not. And then you interjected this point about figuring things out. So I just want to ask you about this, maybe for those out there struggling about whether college or not college or how to be successful. What are your thoughts about this?
So Kevin, what I've learned through all of these experiences is that, we put ourselves in a box. Mm-hmm. Almost always, the size of the box may vary. And I've put myself, and I continue to put myself in a box at times, but I truly, truly believe that you can become exceptional at anything if you're willing mm-hmm. to spend the time at it. And it is perhaps going to take way more than you think it is. And it's going to perhaps be harder than what you think it is, but it is possible. I debate this topic with my friends, even today, who seem to think otherwise, that people, get defined. We don't get defined early on. I think we never get defined. It's choices, but we put ourselves in a box very early on. So I put myself in various kinds of boxes. So, one box I put myself in very early on was I'm not good at languages.
Yes.
And I overcame that. Mm. Another box that I put myself in was that I'm good at academics, but entrepreneurship is something very different. Okay. And then, I had then had the courage to start a company. Another box that I put myself on is I'm a technology guy because I have all these patents and everything, and I can't do sales as an example. I can go on and on and on and on. In fact, I teach people how to do sales to many people and I help them. But, we all put ourselves in boxes, and that's something you first have to realize that you've put your own limits on yourself, and then you have to really figure out how to put yourself and pull yourself out of the box. Wow. In many ways. Okay, so it's a journey of self-realization.
Yes, I love that, a journey of self-realization, and I believe in that so much. I'll tell this very briefly, this story. That I think you're going to like, but I want you to pick up on this idea that you've already been talking about. So I remember it was some type of a news. I don't even now, it's been so long, I don't know if I read it or saw it on television or something, but essentially there was a man who bought a house, if I can remember this correctly, and he for some reason, he had, I don't remember if he was showing the house around to somebody, maybe he was going to sell it or something like this. And so he's showing this, this house to these, to this person, and they're walking through the house, and he's showing them it's an old house and some things he's done to it. But the crux of the story is that they were walking down a hall, and just as they walked down the hall, to the right, there was a door that was open to the garage. And the man that followed him looked, and he goes, oh, he said, what's that? He goes, oh, that's my Harley Davidson. He goes, oh my goodness, of all the, oh, you know what? He was an engineer. And actually it was a news crew that came over to interview him about something he had invented, whatever it was. So anyways, so he goes, they said, oh my goodness. And you're a Harley Davidson, yada, yada, yada. He goes, no, not really. He says, I actually don't even ride. And they were confused. They said, well, why do you have that beautiful, completely cherried, gorgeous Harley Davidson out there? He said, well, actually, I bought this house from a very old man. And when he was showing me around, he showed me this Harley, but it was a piece of, he says, literally a pile of junk sitting in the middle of the, and he said, the old man said, I don't know what to do with this. And the man said, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. And had no agenda, just said, I'll get rid of it, you know. I don't even know if he knew it was a Harley or whatever. It was that desperate. And he said, and so I worked on it, and there you have it. And the news journalist was just, his mind was blown. He goes, what do you mean? Do you have a bachelor's in mechanics? Or he goes, no. Well, how did you do this? He said, I just figured it out. I just looked at different things, and I said, this must go here. And I've been working on this for years, but I just figured it out. That's all. And he doesn't even ride. And you said that earlier, and we've talked before, and you mentioned this whole idea of figuring things out. And I think that's so important in our world where, I admittedly go to YouTube pretty quickly now, nowadays, to figure stuff out. Talk about that, Manish, about how you figured things out. The Korean language, we'll start with that.
Very interesting, Kevin. And I really think that we're very lucky, because we have tremendous access to knowledge.
Yes.
Whether it's YouTube, I think YouTube is great for things, learning how to, how to videos and things like that. I don't consider YouTube as a way to, really educate myself. But, we have these tremendous resources available. But at the end of the day, knowledge, Kevin, knowledge is pervasive. You go to a library and there are a million books. Mm. Okay. It doesn't mean that, we are able to assimilate and apply that knowledge. And figuring it out comes down to, first assimilating that knowledge, and then, figuring it out, and then applying that knowledge. And it's where you apply that knowledge is where you gain the deeper insights. So year one, I get into Korea, and I've convinced myself that I absolutely cannot. I'm bad at languages. I've convinced myself of that. And then, 3 months go by, Samsung says, hey, enroll yourself in a Korean class. It would help you. And I go to class, and I give up very, very quickly. So 3 weeks in, I said, not happening for me. Why is it this way? And the teacher said, it is this way because it is this way. Or, languages are funny, right? I mean, how do you pronounce a certain thing? It is just that way. That's how pronunciation works, right? So, I convinced myself that, this is not going to happen. In some ways, it was different times in Korea. The year was 2002, and the World Cup was happening in Korea at that point. So that country had become more open. So they had, signs and everything in English. Before that, they didn't have that. So you were kind of, and in a big city, they had that. But, for everyday life, it was really a challenge. At the workplace, things were fine, but you got to live your life. You got to be able to buy groceries and so forth, right? So, it helped me that Korean is an alphabetical system. It's not a character system like Chinese. Chinese is one of the hardest languages to learn. Yes. Because you really need to learn 10,000 characters, but Korean is alphabetical. In fact, Korea has this tremendous linked to education. So there was a king named Sejong in Korea, and Korea used to used a Chinese character-based system. And King Sejong said, and you'll find him in all bills in Korea. October 9th is his birthday. It's coming up, by the way, World Education Day. Oh, it's the birthday of King Sejong. Okay, really remarkable, that we're meeting around this time. That's one of the, I think that's when I had landed in Korea around that time as well. And he said that I'm going to create an alphabet system in Korea. So he created about 20 or 25 characters. And, like English has alphabets, right? So he moved from a character-based system to an alphabet-based system. And those are easier to learn. Okay, so I started to learn the alphabets a little bit. And then I was able to read a little bit, and I was able to, quickly read and predict the rest of it to, with some accuracy, I could start to make my way around, Samsung being a very large company, even in the early 2000s, they were a very powerful force in Korea.
Yes.
They were very nice, took care of all of their foreign employees. So we had all kind of help available. But then I got more interested. So year one, I kind of gave up and then restarted classes towards the end of year one after being very frustrated. But then by then I had like figured out, this is an alphabet system. It's not impossible to learn it, because early on, I didn't even realize that this is alphabets. I thought these are all Chinese characters, right? I had no idea.
Wow.
Because in a newspaper, there's still intermixed Chinese and Korean. It took me some time to realize that this is like 26 characters if you learn, right? And a colleague of mine sat down with me and showed me, literally how to write A, B, C, D, or the equivalent of that. So I said, I can read. And I quickly picked up reading in a week, okay?
Wow.
And then I went back to class. And I found this very, very, very funny Korean teacher. And he would, joke around, and he made it enjoyable. Okay, I began to like going to class. The second year went by, I did the basic introduction. And then I did, I could speak sentences, but vocabulary was a huge challenge. The toughest thing to learn in a language is not reading or writing, it's the vocabulary.
Yes,
because, there are about 10 to 20,000 words that, need to be, you need to know the vocabulary. I had by then bought an electronic dictionary. So again, it's the early 2000s. There was no smartphones back then, right? So I bought an electronic dictionary, and I could write in Korean. It would translate it for me. And I used to carry it. It used to be in my pocket like my keys. So I had my phone, a normal flip phone, my electronic dictionary and my keys and my wallet. And everywhere I used to be writing, it is this, it is this. So I think I began to increase my vocabulary. And then, there was a school close to my home, and I used to see kids, go by. And then, one fine day, I just happened to ask my Korean colleague, how did you learn Korean as a kid? I'm really struggling with vocabulary. How many words do you know, and how many words do kids learn growing up? And he started to tell me how kids learn Korean. So they learn, something called as a chonjamun. Okay, chon means thousand.
Mm.
Okay, and then that means they basically learn 1,000 Chinese characters. And that's what they do from early on up to middle school or something. And I asked, what is the significance of, the Chinese characters? And he said that while King Sejong invented the alphabet, he didn't change the language. He just made it easier to read and write. So all of these words have a Chinese origin, right? And it is those 1,000 critical Chinese characters that you need to learn. And most Korean words, and there are pure Korean words, and there are words of Chinese origin. And, of course, the country is, over the thousands of years, they have pure Korean words as well. But 80% of what was used is of Chinese origin. So kids don't learn vocabulary, they learn chonjamun, right?
Wow.
So I started learning chonjamun, and I learned 100 Chinese characters, and I learned 200, and those are not hard to read, not hard to learn, because it's like I picked up kids' books. And, while we were being taught Korean, we were not taught Korean that way. Right. So I kind of learned Korean as how a Korean kid would learn. And my vocabulary just exploded. Wow. It just exploded because within those 500 combinations of, you know, characters, you know, combining two or three of them to form a word, my vocabulary grew to 5,000 words, to 10,000 words, to 20,000 words. And I can still now say, this Chinese character, this Chinese character, this Chinese character, right? So I'll give you an example. So the Korean word for America is Miguk, okay? And Mi means beautiful, and Guk means country. So they call America as the beautiful country, okay?
My goodness.
Okay? And then, you know, they call China as Chungguk. Do you notice the Guk? Exactly, yes. Because that means country.
Country.
And Chung is center. Okay, so they call, because they have a Chinese origin. So, and the, you know, so they call China as the center of the world. Chungguk. Okay. Okay. That Chung is used as a center in many other places, and the Guk is country. So I know Taeguk. I know, you know, many other countries. Now Yongguk. Yongo is a country of the English, right? So do you see how
very interesting. Yes.
It increases.
It's so expressive as well. I think you can remember those sorts of things.
Yeah. If you remember, again, you know, I cannot forget Miguk now, because, you know, a lot of girls will have names starting with Mi, because so a lot of Mijong is a common name in Korea. And I used to ask, what is this Mi? So they said beauty. And it's the same word used in Miguk, right?
Wow.
So you suddenly become engulfed in culture. You connect patterns all around. And all it took was me learning 500 to 1,000 Chinese characters. And I can still read Korean because I know those fundamental building blocks. You know, I left Korea 15 years ago now. I still talk to my Korean friends and my vocabulary is there. Of course, I've forgotten a lot. I don't get to practice. You know, back in grad school, I was lucky. I had so many Korean friends. I still go to a restaurant and sometimes my other friends will take me there to, you know, fool around with, you know, with other native speakers there, right? And I enjoy that. It makes me back. But again, it's that journey of figuring out. And it took me 3 or 4 years, Kevin. It was not something that happened overnight. Right. From going from the fact that discovering that Chinese characters to learning 5 of them, 10 of them, buying several books, beginning to immerse myself. So I made a goal, I learned 1 a day, but then I learned 5 a day. And my friends were very enthusiastic about helping me because they could see that, oh, this guy is not just learning, he's actually picking it up very fast. So I had all the help available. So when you figure it out, people help you, right? And and the world connects in many ways, Kevin.
Well, you in doing so, you know, because I would love to, you know, pursue this just a little bit more for the listeners. And by the way, I've been to Korea a couple of times. It's a beautiful country, wonderful people with beautiful traditions in so many ways. In fact, I hope my friend Danielle is watching this. We'll watch this in any event. But, you know, the idea of figuring out, you know, would it be safe to say in your way of thinking that some of the, let's say, the components of figuring it out, and this means anything, because I want to open this up, Manish, to people learning and growing. And so figuring out is comprised of curiosity, right? I mean, you begin with this notion of curiosity, which I would submit to you then causes questions. And then the questions start leading to more of that. And that at least is maybe the beginning path of figuring things out. Because so many people, as you just expressed, I've done it for sure, I still do it, put myself in a box. And then, you know, but sometimes I literally say, Kevin, you know, just figure it out, you know? So what other components, you know, curiosity, asking questions, what are the things that would lead a person to step away from their, as we call them, self-limiting beliefs, these boxes we put ourselves in, and start pursuing things that they're concerned they can't do?
Yeah, a very interesting question.
It's not an easy one, I'm sure.
What are the principles of figuring it out is what you're asking me.
Exactly.
Let me tell you what comes to mind. So one is having at least some amount of genuine interest in the problem, right? Interest. And then you try it a few times and you give up and that's okay. Okay. And you fail at it. But then you know, the ability to pursue it in spite of, you know, failing it. So most people don't pursue it once they have failed at it. They just give up, right? So, you know, trying it again. So it's like a kid learning bicycle, right? You have to fall down. In fact, in learning most interesting things in life, you can just, you know, I don't know of any kid who has learned to ride without falling down. You are going to fall down. In some ways, you should expect to fall down, right? Okay. And how many times will you fall down is up to you. And how many times will you give up? And I know kids, really, some people would say, I didn't know how to ride a bicycle, but almost everybody does, right? That's so, right. You know, you expect to fall down. But then expect to try it again. Okay, so you try it again, and then ultimately figuring it out comes down to finding what works for you. Many times in learning anything, we try to follow set paths. For us, so we say that if you learn these three books, you're going to learn marketing or sales or whatever. And that's a good thing. But ultimately, you have to figure out what works for you. And there is no set defined answer for it. Sometimes people do it with a coach. You know, sometimes they do it, or they don't have the luxury of having a coach. Sometimes people try to do it by reading. But ultimately, you know, you have to see what works for you. You have to take small steps, but then, it gets accelerated. So your velocity is going to be very slow in the beginning, and you can't be impatient with it. To get to me learning 600 Chinese characters, it took me a long while. Mm. It took me a year. But the effects of that were significantly better than learning 600 words, let me say. So, you know, your analytical brain at some point will kick in and start to find patterns in things. What works for you, what doesn't work for you, but for that, you must have tried several things. So you need to have the courage to try many, many things, mm-hmm. even things that don't fail. Okay, so you need to, know what things work, what things fail, what things work a little bit. But then have the courage to continue to, to try new things and new approaches. And then your analytical brain in some ways will say, doing this and this works. Okay. And that, that is the initial part of figuring it out. But then you can't just stop over there. Okay. Because your goal is, again, if you really want to become very, very good at something, you have to continue. You have to continue. You have to push yourself up and up and up. And the real value comes much later on, Kevin. Because you cannot still speak Korean knowing 500 words. You can only become very good at it when you know 5,000 or 10,000. That needs tremendous effort. So you have to, even once you've figured it out, Kevin, success can seem very, very far.
Wow. Okay.
It can seem very, very far, but then it becomes more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And you can see the small wins around you. Okay, you can, the moment I said, Chungguk means Chung, the center of the world. The Chinese used to think of themselves as the center of the world, right? I mean, it's their language, so you would think so. I think of America as the center of the world in many ways, right? Then things begin to start connected. But by then, you are in year 2, 3, 4. So you need to have a long-term perspective. You need to have a long-term perspective, but then you become you become very good at it. So what has happened, Kevin, over a period of time, this accumulation of knowledge in the world? Okay, so the things that we know are way more than what we knew 100 years ago. This is tremendous. So 100 years ago, we used to think that there's only one galaxy, as an example, right? Mm-hmm. That notion didn't change till I think the 1920s, right? So there is just this accumulation of knowledge in the world. So now you're expected to know a lot. And that's something, if you want to pursue new and interesting things, it's a given that you have to bring yourself to the state of the art and then pursue it beyond it. That's something that I did, getting my PhD. You have to just bring yourself to the state of the art. But that means constant learning, constant exploration. You're going to fail, but it takes time, Kevin. Okay, wow. It takes time. So you cannot have, you cannot say, I'm going to give myself 2 months to learn, a language, or I'm going to give myself 2 years to or 4 years to become a very good engineer. You may get your degree. Again, Kevin, one thing that I've learned is you said the notion of going to college or not. In many ways, what I've learned and made mistakes that college is not life, it's preparation for life. Okay. So when you go to a very good school, like I went to IIT, I found that once I came out, I had a good job and all of that. But then ultimately, you still have to use that knowledge. Okay. So in some ways, going to a very good college, you know, blocks you from applying yourself. So you have to then, you know, use that knowledge to do something meaningful, useful, you know, for yourself, create interesting things if you are that, if you have that bent of mind. Right. So all of this is preparation. College is preparation for life, not life. Right. Okay.
Well, boy, that's so important what you said. And I'll tell you, you just delivered an amazing, you know, stream of thoughts about figuring things out, about success. And I was just writing down keywords as you went along. And I want to just, I want us to break this down for our audience. Because right now, Manish, I'm thinking of maybe younger people, you know, define whatever you want younger to be, but people who are still trying to find their way, trying to realize their potential, whatever the case might be, that might listen to this. And I mean, I think you hit on so many different important points. You know, first of all, the whole idea of genuine interest in something. And, you know, genuine interest doesn't have to be, by the way, you know, one's passion. You see, you know, how do you discover your own passion? That, I think that's a whole conversation in and of itself. But if there's something that you are going to pursue or need to pursue, then you do have to have this basic genuine interest in what it is that you're doing for whatever that reason might be. Yeah. Then you went on, and I thought this was, these two were really big, and they kind of flowed throughout as you were talking. One, you didn't say these words, but you mentioned this idea of expectations, of, you know, of expect to fail and expect, you know, and that the expectations take place before you try something. You know, it's at least it's best to, in my way of thinking, that if you're going to try to ride a bike as an adult, to expect that you're going to fall, then I believe gives you the mindset, I expected that to happen. So what's the next step? You try again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, that is correct, Kevin. Okay, so at some point when you get used to learning many, many new things, that's an advanced concept. When I do sales, as an example, I expect three no's to begin with. So I feel that the real conversation starts after the three no's, because then you're forced to delve deeper, right? I figured it out. You know, that's one sign when you can predict things before happening. Right. That's a sign that you have a handle on things. But again, you know, I still haven't learned how to close $10 million deals or $1 million deal. I'm still learning. Again, so again, there is this path to learning, Kevin. OK, so people put themselves in a box to begin with. OK, so you have to untie yourself from a box, believe that, you know, that, you know, you can do it. Try to do it. It's OK to fail. Give it, you know, try a few different attempts at it. Try different approaches to learning the same thing. One approach to learning thing, and I'll tell you of three approaches I tried. Going to class was one approach I tried. Okay. Another approach is, you know, I tried is, you know, carrying an electronic dictionary, and that helped. But then I ultimately figured out the real deal was how trying to figure out how kids learn in Korea. You know, kids also need to learn, right? It's a third different, a fourth approach was, you know, trying to have conversations in my neighborhood and with my colleagues and so forth. And Koreans are inquisitive people, right? They'll come talk to you and they're very friendly and you know, they're very happy if somebody's trying to do that. So, you know, I had positive reinforcements. But ultimately, these, do you see, these are all different approaches?
Yes.
And, you know, while somebody might have tried only one approach, you know, going to class. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Trying these different approaches. But then once you've figured it out, you got to, you know, in Silicon Valley, we have this interesting, you know, interesting phrase, you know, if you find a small hole, like if you can thread a needle, you must try to drive a car through it. That's how Silicon Valley works, right? Yeah. You know, they find these small opportunities because, you know, everybody's trying to thread their needle. Yeah. And while it looked like something very small, but once you've discovered it, okay, then you realize, you know, if I learn, you know, 5,000 Chinese characters, then, you know, I have a vocabulary as good as, you know, say a native speaker and, you know, an adult, right? Again, so it's about threading that needle, and you will thread that needle. If you stay long enough to it, if you figure it out, and, you know, everybody again can't thread a needle in the first attempt. It takes many attempts. Do you see that analogy there again?
Yes, absolutely. Right, and to your point, you may try different different approaches, I mean, different ways that you're holding it or whatever the case might be. That's fascinating. Yeah. The other thing again, that, go ahead, please.
Sorry, Kevin. I'd like to add that,
please.
You know, that what we have taken is these concepts, again, you know, LearnDesk is a system that we build that enables this in many ways. So you can, right. You know, go read a book there. You can go talk to a coach there. You can attend a group class there. You can, you know, take a recorded program there. You can join a webinar. Again, there are all these different approaches. And that in some ways, with the accumulation of knowledge, people wanting to learn new things, you need all of these ways to learn. And you can perfectly do it on your own. So this technology that is coming to your help as well. In fact, we built LearnDesk from all of these experiences. I'll tell you another interesting story, of somebody putting themselves in a box and overcoming it. You know, my co-founder, Vivek, fascinating guy, mm-hmm. Trained as a mechanical engineer. I have a PhD in computer science. He is kind of the best Python programmer I've ever seen or heard of. And he taught himself. But it took him 15 years. He's written probably, several million lines of code. He has figured it out, right? So you put yourself in a box. So, people around him were not coding. You know, they used to do mechanical stuff and engineering, drawing and so forth, right? But he had this interest, no formal education in coding yet. Okay, now I think we think that anybody can code. And again, this applies to pretty much everything, Kevin, okay? So, and then we build this platform around it. We'll talk about it in more detail, yes. Kevin. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the concepts.
Fascinating, yes. And we definitely are going to talk about LearnDesk. So the other thing, though, and you just kind of expressed that when you were talking about Vivek, about it took him 15 years to learn coding. And the other, let me say some of the others, and then I'm going to finish off with this one. You mentioned, again, I don't know if you actually said this, but I wrote this down, that, the courage to try and to try again. These are all principles for learning and growing and succeeding. You mentioned, you mentioned, that sort of this momentum that you get this stride going. Again, I don't know if that's a word that you use, but it was something that I'd written down. But the other one that I thought was really important that you just mentioned through Vivek, and you've said this with other things, and that is this concept, which I believe that many of us, I might even say this is I don't know if it's an American phenomenon with younger, more, I don't know, but it's the idea of patience. That let me just say that I just believe that generally speaking, people are becoming less patient for a lot of different reasons. But certainly, if you're too patient in the business world in Silicon Valley, somebody will pass you up. So you have to either go with the culture or not. But you would certainly agree to learn, grow, change, succeed. Ultimately, patience has to play a role here.
Yes, Kevin, I feel that looking at, younger adults and even my colleagues and older colleagues, I think we've gotten more used to instant gratification.
Right, exactly.
So, we want our Amazon box to be delivered the same day. I love it when it shows up in the afternoon, right? Okay. But that instant gratification or that concept of that, I don't think many things work when it comes to learning and growing because this is an intellectual exercise. It doesn't happen instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And that the concept of that instant gratification stops people from learning because, it's not, learning anything new, not just a language, any skill, any topic, formal or non-formal, okay? These, because of, again, accumulation of knowledge and there's a journey to it. It's not as simple as, liking a video or collecting, likes anymore. And somehow I feel that with social media and so forth, our brains are more tuned to the concept of instant gratification. I made a post, I got 50 likes to it, right? Mm-hmm. Or I got 100 shares and their likes flowing around all around. Learning something new is not the business of collecting likes. It's about, having a genuine interest in it, pursuing it. And, again, you are not, if you go into the attitude of, you know, I want to be a master of this at, you know, 2 months in, quite likely you're setting up yourself up for failure. And there will be people who, you know, will be able to do it, but your likelihood is, you know, you're just putting yourself again in a box that you can do it this quickly. If it happens, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, in my case, it didn't happen. It just took me longer, but it didn't stop me from doing things. Okay.
Yes.
Another thing that a box that I put myself in, and I genuinely feel, is that we think that there are people who are talented at something. You know, I really feel that talent in many ways is overrated. And there's a very popular book on that. It's titled Talent is Overrated. I'll encourage folks to read that. And then there are, you know, other theories around it, like the 10,000 hour rule and things like that. But I think there's more to it than that, right? You cannot be doing the same things. You need to really figure it out. And then, you know, you need to figure out what works and then continue to pursue that further and further as well. But this, I don't really believe in the notion of a talent, right? You know, it's about, again, pursuing that with genuine interest, trying it many times, figuring it out and then pushing. And then ultimately trying to drive, you know, a car through the needle is what will take you to the absolute top. And when I say an absolute top, it is, you know, 0.1%, 1 in 10,000. Yeah. You can really, really excel at, you know, something at that point.
You know, there's so much about what you said that I think is just profoundly important. You know, I might say, and you probably wouldn't disagree, that there are people that have certain talents and gifts in some areas. And but we've also seen, I mean, how many people have you seen that you looked at them and thought to yourself, you know, what talent, but they put in no effort, there's no work involved. And so the talent is, you know, is all for naught. And there's others who would submit that, yeah, others might be more talented than I, but they won't work harder than me. And therefore they become the ones that success. So I do agree with you to some extent there about talent, you know. But I think, you know, even when it comes to, I've seen people who get into, let's say, who join some organization, some business somewhere, and they might even be new to the workplace. And they've been maybe even told much of their life how talented they are or how good they are, or how smart they are.
Yeah.
And so they join this business, and within 3 months, they're looking for a promotion.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, and everybody around is saying, okay, well, you have some talent there, but you've got some work to do. And so the idea is that mindset of not being patient, of going into an organization or going into to invent something, it doesn't matter what the issue is, but going in with this mentality that, you know, I'm going to learn this. I'm going to practice it. I'm going to understand it. And that is what ultimately lifts you to the next position. I mean, it will be obvious, I would say for the most part, if we are talking about management, that people will look at you once you have achieved a certain amount and go, we need this person, you know, in a higher position because of, you know, whatever.
Very interesting points you made, Kevin. In many ways, in America at least, or in corporate America at least, that's how it's been.
Yeah.
You get the job once you're already doing it.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, you know, you're good at sales and then you become, you know, the head of sales. You know, in some ways, you have to prove yourself.
Yes.
And part of the problem, Kevin, is we give this tremendous weight to college and what college we went to, right? And Harvard and Stanford or MIT or IIT, right? But ultimately, remember we talked about this is preparation for life,
right?
Just because you are from, say, a top school, and you might have all the talent, you still need to go apply yourself and use it. And part of, and I have, right when I got out of college, it was, you know, I was like a balloon in some ways. And that balloon had to be pricked, you know, because I had gone to the best college in my country, you know, the MIT of India. And, you know, I was in this balloon thinking that I don't have to work anymore. And I got a cushy job and everything.
Very
that comes in You still have to do things,
Yes.
and that's a starting, and that's preparation.
Yes.
In some ways, it took me to being a nobody. So when I went to Korea, in some ways, I think my college, all that puffiness, all that balloon got pricked because I went to a country, forget about knowing about IIT or a good
Yeah.
college, they didn't even speak
Yeah.
English,
Yeah.
right?
Right.
So I had to
Yeah.
become known for my work,
Yeah. Very
right?
interesting. Yeah.
Okay, so you ultimately have to work, and you have to do good work, and you have to learn how
Yeah.
to do good work, and you have to put yourself in an organization and work with people, because ultimately great things get built by teams of people,
Gosh.
not just the individual, right? For yourself, then you have to be a part of the team, and there are all these other skills that go beyond talent or college, and that's something that you have to realize.
Wow.
Right. Okay.
So
All
well
those
said.
other components, it's not just your talent or what college you went to, how you apply that
How you
knowledge
apply it.
towards a common good.
That's right.
Right.
That's for the common good. You're exactly right. Because if nobody wants what you're bringing,
Yeah.
then all you've learned and all you've done means nothing. So Manish, let's talk about LearnDesk. It's a fascinating online, education system. But I want you to first just explain what it is for the layperson out there that might be watching this.
So, what we have found, Kevin, is that learning is driven by this tremendous era of connectivity that we have today. Okay, so we are all much more connected today than we were earlier, but the world itself is becoming hyper connected. Okay, just post COVID, the world has changed a lot. Okay, most learning used to happen face to face. Post COVID, and movement towards that had started. This all this era of people learning from each other while not being in the same room. But all of this needs to be enabled by technology in a very, very well thought out way. So at its core, LearnDesk is a technology platform. It has three components to it. We want to enable teachers. Okay, in an era where your student could literally be anywhere in the world. Okay, so teaching is becoming more technology driven. You need tools, software. Okay, so teaching is no longer just somebody going to a blackboard and writing stuff. There's technology that can be implemented to enable the teacher. Okay, so there is software
Wow.
that fulfills hundreds of workflows for a teacher:
Yeah.
scheduling, payment processing, material sharing, quizzes, certifications, doing assessments of people. All of this technology, a lot of it is driven by workflows around teaching. Okay, and then at the same time, what we have found is that the student side of learning is not enabled by technology at all. So you might hear things like practice makes a man perfect. Do any of us use any real software to do practice? Is it enabled by technology in any
Oh,
way?
interesting.
Right,
Yeah.
okay. So, it is not. Okay, so we want to take learning from something that's gone on for thousands of years and enable it deeply by technology. So, three things around it: technology for teachers, technology for learners, and then connecting teachers and learners together, because we work or live in this global era. So, Kevin, in the 1970s, manufacturing became international. A lot of the stuff started getting produced globally. In the early 2000s, services moved international. Okay, it's predicted that learning and enabled by this era of hyperconnectivity, learning is going to become a lot more international. We see that across college campuses today, right? Colleges provide a
Yes.
tremendous learning environment. But then, I was talking to a charter school the other day, trying to get them to implement LearnDesk. There are 25,000 students who are remote, Kevin. Okay, so they are as big as any school district in our country, right? And they're a charter school, purely online. Okay, purely
Amazing.
online. Okay, so tremendous opportunities, but all of this has to be driven through technology and systems like Zoom and so forth. They're meeting systems. A lot of people come and say, we have Zoom, which is awesome, right?
Sure.
But there are all of these, workflows for teaching, how to enable it, workflows for the student itself, technology for the student. Whether you want to, some of what we have developed at LearnDesk is not domain specific, but we see a whole set of tools for learning languages, a whole set of tools for learning, a sport, a whole set of tools for learning personal development topics, okay? A whole set of tools for people who coach, a whole set of tools for teachers who train physically. Oh, and wow. Also, the traditional boundaries between in-person and online have kind of merged. A lot of the online learning or technology companies, they talk about, purely being online. But what it is really is technology to do offline and online, okay? And then being able to connect. So, we are in some ways trying to build the operating system of learning and teaching because nobody has really built that. A lot of the technology companies, they're either consumer companies or they're internet companies. Amazon is busy, selling us stuff. Google is in the business of selling, clicks. And, Microsoft is an enterprise company. There is this big dearth of pure technology companies focused on education. We're trying to define how all of this will evolve in a hyper-connected world 10, 20, 30 years from now. Wow. We've probably built about 1%. So we are building a technology-enabled platform that that enables teachers, enables people to learn, connects people across for topics that are not just academic in nature. Again, learning is constant, Kevin. Okay, learning is perpetual in today's world. Learning is fun. Also, yes. Another thing, Kevin, as prosperity grows in the world, there's the last world war happened, many, many years ago, many decades now. While there have been wars, in general, prosperity is growing. That leads people to pursue interests.
That's right.
Right? Learning is going to become more and more and more interesting. Accumulation of knowledge, more skills needed in the workforce.
Yes.
Right? All of these, can be enabled, and that's what LearnDesk is building.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, So you started LearnDesk, in 2016, right?
Yes.
And you just said that we are only 1% into it? I mean, that is an amazing thought that you see yourself after, that many years. Now, I mean, my point is that when we talk about patience, for you to and I know that you're enthusiastic and you've put a lot of work into LearnDesk, but to think that you still have, I mean, if you said 10%, to think that you still have 90% to grow is an incredible thought. Really an attribute in my way of thinking to what you and Vivek are doing here, because it says that, wow, if we're this already this far along, I can't imagine what it'll be like when you're at 50% or 70%. Did I misunderstand that?
No, Kevin, you make a good point. You have to also remember that teaching is a very, very old profession, and learning has been around, since we built tools to do stuff as humans, right? So teaching as a profession, right, has been around, we would say, 5,000 years at least, right? Yeah. Okay. So we are taking this something that is very, very old and enabling it with technology. There are 100 million teachers in the world, Kevin. It's one of the most common professions. So the use cases, the way teaching happens across languages, geographical boundaries, things that people learn, there's so much diversity around it. Right. Okay. There's so much diversity around it. And we feel that all of this can be highly enabled by technology.
Yes.
Okay. There is, again, when I said we're trying to build the operating system for learning teaching, all of these, there's a different way to learn a sport than to learn a language, than to learn maths, than to learn science, than to learn chemistry, right? And there are thousands of things people want to learn, okay? And learning is going to become more and more specialized. So this technology that is needed, the way you learn maths is very different from the way, for example, you learn cooking, okay? But, I wish I had learned cooking in my life. Again, these are life skills.
Yes.
These are academic topics, okay? Mm-hmm. So Learning is very, very diverse, Kevin. So if I were to build a technology platform that enables all learning, and Kevin, once you start to thread that needle and you start to drive, you drive a car, or a truck through that needle, you see the vision. Okay, when we first started LearnDesk, we did not used to think, but in talking to people, so I've talked, our team and I have talked to 50,000, we've had 50,000 meetings or interviews with teachers to figure out a vision. It didn't happen overnight. The longer we work on it, I thought we had developed 10% of it, but it's kind of dropped to one. Because the more we talk to people, the more we realize, gosh, we haven't done anything, right? This is needed.
Right? I've seen LearnDesk. I mean, it's an amazing... and I've told you this before, it's one of the most well thought out, online education systems that I've personally seen. And so that's why I'm amazed to hear that. I mean, again, it doesn't matter if it's 1% or 10%, but the idea of what the potential is just amazing. I do want to press on this point right here, though, Manish, and that is that, when I started in this business as a coach and as a speaker, since I started in 2000, doing everything from keynotes to workshops to retreats to coaching and all these sorts of consulting, as I'm working, my first 20 years of my adult life was in the Air Force, and it was, in that culture. But as I got out, I had to figure out all of these things, much of which, sales being one of the things that is still the thorn in my side, but that's a different topic. I have some people to help me with that. But the thing about it is that, a lot of people in my field, let's talk about life coaches or business coaches, they always talk about, success and achievement, and nothing is wrong with that. But I could not get my head away over this 20 years, more than 20 years that I've been doing this. I could not get my mind out of the thought that the way to be successful is to learn and grow. That, I would deliver a keynote or a workshop and particularly a workshop or some kind of training. And there was this expectation of leaving there. I mean, if you ask people about it, they would say, nah, I didn't think that I would be an expert once I left out of here. But there's still that mindset that something substantial will happen even in this 8 hours. And anymore, particularly if I'm doing a workshop or a long-term training or something, I tell them, listen, I bring this knowledge. There are some areas, and I'm in the soft skills industry, so it's not exactly like you bring a hammer, The tools that you have are here, and here, they belong to the senses. And I tell them, I say, listen, I'm sitting here with 20 professionals who are mid to upper level managers. You've done a lot. You've seen a lot. What I want to do is present this knowledge to you, these ideas to you, and perhaps even these tools, but you have to figure out how to use them and how to apply them. So what I'm expecting, what I'm encouraging you is to get into this flow, into this conversation with me, and you have the aha moment about what you'll do about this, as opposed to having this expectation that I'm the teacher, I'm going to teach you how to do it, and then you go out and do it. I mean, it's not that that doesn't happen. It does depend on what the topic is. But do you see where I'm going? That I've rested on this ground that what I do is help people learn and grow. And you can take it from there and figure it out. Any of that makes sense to you?
It does, Kevin. Okay, it does. See, in an eight-hour period, you cannot teach them a new field. You cannot bring them to the state of the art. You can definitely impact their mindset.
Yes.
You can definitely give them tips and tricks.
Yes.
You can get them to open up. And, I think the biggest takeaway from this is you can change their mindset.
Yes.
Okay? You can change, mindset change happens quickly. You can get them to think and hopefully on a trajectory, slightly different trajectory.
Yes.
When the trajectory changes by a degree, it's over time that, the y-axis changes by 1 degree when, the differences happen over time. So that's the job of a coach. And that's a very powerful job of a coach, getting people to think differently. But they still have to, pursue this, you know, over a period of time. And, you know, time is where, you know, things you know, get accelerated or things change. It does take, you know, time to have, you know, significant impact. You need to give a bit of time. And when I said, you know, we've built 1% of things, yeah. you know, to be able to get to where we are or have significant impact, it needs time as well. Yes. Today is a very interesting day, Kevin. I just realized it's 2nd of October today. So today is the birthday of Mahatma Gandhi. Okay, the guy, you know, again, I'm American, you know, Indian, you know, India has had a lot of influence on me, you know, growing up. Sure. You know, one interesting thing that I found recently about Gandhi was, you know, for the first 45 years of his life, he never participated in the freedom movement in India. So he was a lawyer who lived in South Africa for many years, but when he came back to India, he was age 45. So, you know, Gandhi didn't become even close to becoming the father of our the nation. He actually started that journey at 45 and ended it at 79, wow. You know, okay? So it's not too late. But then it didn't happen at 46, 49, yeah. Right? It, you know, it still took him 34 years, but then by then he was wiser. One thing he had learned as a lawyer, he had figured it out. Okay, there are interesting stories about him. So he was a lawyer in South Africa, and he used to know how to apply the rule of law, and the British were all about applying the rule of law. So he used that in a legal environment against them. For that, he had to be a lawyer. So there were other approaches to gaining independence, like being violent or nonviolent. All of that came. But his approach was very unique. And, you know, all his past contributed to that because he was a lawyer. He was a trained lawyer. He knew because South Africa was also a British colony, so he knew the law, you know, and he applied it in new and interesting ways. And of course, he needed all the other 100 things, you know, great, you know, amazing person, motivate people, sure. Build a team. So, you know, he had a team of 77 people who used to live with him in his ashram. So sometimes we say 77 people can change the world.
I had no idea.
Talk about Gandhi.
That's good. I like that. I you know, listen, that's interesting. I would have never thought about the team that he had. I mean, you think and see, read things about Gandhi. It's many times his quotes, and you see him walking by himself, but no, he had a team.
Yeah.
How interesting is that?
Yeah, he had a team, and he had a very well-knit team, and those people lived with him and fought for that, you know, mission over a period of a long time. So one thing that we have learned as part of LearnDesk as well, you need to have a team. Mm-hmm. You can only so achieve so much as, you know, a single person until you can build a team and motivate other people. Again, having a team is, the path to achieving things of significance. So to go back to what you were talking about, the young adults who demand a promotion, you know, you will get that promotion, you know, if you've shown your value, if you've done work of significance, and you can show to your team members that you're a part of it and you can do great things together. Everybody wants to grow. Every organization right. wants to grow. But I don't think it really works that you go and demand growth. Growth cannot be demanded. It has to be,
right.
You know, you can't like demand a tree to grow up in some ways, right?
That's exactly right. Well, and that was exactly my thought. Now we're back to the beginning. And that is the idea that when Jim Rohn asked his audience, how tall will a tree grow? All of them would suggest things that we already know. They say, well, it depends on the type of tree. Yes, it depends on where it grows, in the forest versus in an open, wide open space with a lot of sun, you know, the nutrients it receives, the roots. There's so many different things. And that was his point about human potential. He would say the final answer is a tree will grow as tall as it can, dot, 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 depending on these elements. And so then he transitioned to the idea that the same goes for you in your success in your life, but the one big difference is that you can choose to grow, and you can choose your environment, you can choose what comes into this space, you can choose what you learn, what you ignore, you can choose the conditions, is what his point was. And that's really the big difference. And so, and you know, speaking of choosing, I hope a lot of people, Manish, choose to watch this podcast and hear the wisdom that you've developed over obviously, you know, really not even, you know, a ton of years, but over a substantial amount of time. But also what's interesting and what did attract me to having you on this podcast was that each time I ever spoke to you, I said, oh, there's a wise guy right here. You know, he's probably an old man in a young man's body or something like this, because there's one thing to have knowledge and another to apply it, and then another to be able to teach it. And that's what I think you really bring to the table here is wisdom based on the things that you've experienced. So listen, before we call it a day, may I just ask Manish, if you will just, and of course all of this will be in the show notes, but you know, tell people where they can find you, where can they find Learn Desk, you know, whatever it is that you would like to share, I would love for you to do this.
Yes, I'll encourage folks to check out Learn Desk, you know, learndesk.us is our website. And if you're a teacher or a coach or somebody who likes to train people, set up a demo, you know, we'll show you, you know, what Learn Desk is all about. Come talk to our team. We'd love to, you know, show you our vision of how teaching is evolving and how we can enable you to be successful. Teachers, you know, coaches, trainers, your work is very, very, very important. Mm-hmm. I cannot stress enough how important teachers are to the world. You know, they enable people to grow and, you know, that creates a better society. So, you know, our mission, the mission of Learn Desk is to enable teachers, coaches, training companies, enable people who want to learn. Okay, if you're a teacher or a coach or a training company, please come talk to our team and we will do our best to enable you within your goals or give you perspectives or it's always fun to talk about where all of this is going and learn from you. Again, every teacher, coach, trainer, you go talk to people in your domain. There are things for us to learn as we build our technology platform. Right. We want to talk to as diverse as teachers as possible. So we'd love to do that. Okay. Thank you so much, Kevin, for having
that's
me.
Fantastic.
I enjoyed speaking with you.
Absolutely. So that's learndesk.us. I will ask, may I ask you just one more question? You know, what's immediately in front of you? What's happening in your world? You know, and by the way, I did mention this at the front. I remember you invented something, you patented something that we are all experiencing right now. And I think you told me about this before, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, so several things, Kevin. I was lucky to invent, several interesting things. So one of the things that I invented was tapping on a device to get it to, stop or pause. So again, some of these things you find, discover. It was the winters in Korea, and I had an MP3 player chained to my neck. But I had to remove my gloves because it had a capacitive screen. And I said, if I just tap on it and I get the music to stop, I could, talk to the person. So out came of that personal experience of, a small problem. And then if you see the Apple AirPods, you can tap on them to, forward them, or go to the next song or something. But it started with that idea of, tapping on an MP3 player because I didn't want to remove my gloves. So again, crazy. Kevin, things grow over time. You know, when I first did that, I had no idea of where technology could lead it to be. And you were going back to what you were saying about we built 1% of Learn Desk. Mm-hmm. Think of the first smartphone, and we're not talking about a phone, because the first phones were like, rotary or behind that. I only grew up with rotary phones, right? But look at the first smartphone and how we have come. If you see that journey, the first Apple iPhone to the 15th one, you would then see that, the first one was perhaps 1% or less of what it's today, right? So that's the same journey we can see, for Learn Desk. It's a very powerful system. We have a vision. Come please work with us.
Well, listen, Dr. Manish Arora, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your great knowledge with us. And so I'll look forward to speaking to you again, I hope.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me.